Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for October 8th, 2010.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
I think that people don't recognize there are lots of different kinds of radiation out there.
Clouds appear white because these little tiny droplets act like lots and lots of little mirrors together, and they reflect radiation.
What we're trying to do here is take maximum advantage of the characteristics of air-breathing propulsion and rocket propulsion.
We can have the robot help the astronaut by handing tools or maybe even doing some of those tasks by itself.
This week, scientists at NASA are getting ready to launch a human-like robotic astronaut into outer space. Also, engineers are designing a new launch system that could make it cheaper to send payloads into orbit. And we'll reveal why microwaves aren't as dangerous as people often think. But first, Suzanne Bard looked to the sky for the answer to a cloudy question.
Have you ever wondered why clouds are white? We put the question to atmospheric scientist Robert Wood of the University of Washington in Seattle, where you're likely to see a lot of the fluffy stuff. He says clouds form from tiny, transparent water droplets that reflect sunlight.
Clouds appear white because these little tiny droplets act like lots and lots of little mirrors together, and they reflect radiation, solar radiation, sunlight, essentially. Sunlight is pretty white, really, and so they scatter it in all kinds of different directions, and the eye sees that as being a white material.
He adds that clouds actually reflect much of that sunlight back into space.
And so they actually act to cool the planet. So if you can increase the amount of clouds for some reason, then you can actually change how much the Earth warms.
And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question on the show, we'll send you a Science Update mug.
Thanks, Suzanne. Next, another episode of our feature reality check, where we investigate paranormal claims and science folklore. This week, microwaves, friend or foe. For many people, the word microwave conjures up scary thoughts, especially when paired with radiation. Some are even afraid of standing in front of a microwave oven or using a cell phone. But according to physicist Betsy Pugel of NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, that could be because most of us misunderstand the word radiation.
I think that people don't recognize there are lots of different kinds of radiation out there. The Homer Simpson school of radiation, where you're at the nuclear towers, the output from that is very energetic. You know, the gamma rays and X-rays and things that can really do damage to your DNA.
But she says microwave radiation is too low in energy to affect DNA, especially at the power levels used in ovens or cell phones. And most studies show no correlation between cell phone use and cancer. Perhaps most persuasive is this statistic from the National Cancer Institute. Over the past two decades, while cell phone use has gone way up, the incidence of brain cancer has gone down. In the classic sci-fi movie The Day the Earth Stood Still, a human-like robot from outer space landed on Earth. In our next story, Science Update correspondent Justin Warner reports that nearly 50 years later, NASA scientists are ready to send their own robotic humanoid into space.
On November 1st, a human-like robotic astronaut is scheduled to make its first trip into outer space. It's called Robonaut, actually Robonaut 2 to be exact, and Philip Strasser of NASA Johnson Space Center is in charge of its software. Strasser says the Robonaut will help human astronauts on the International Space Station with a variety of jobs.
The idea behind the Robonaut project, which started back in 1999 or so, was to have a robotic assistant for astronauts. And what makes sense is if you already have a set of tools and a set of tasks that are already laid out and set up for someone that's of a human size and a human shape, if you have a robot that can do those same things, you could have a robot help out with some of those tasks. And as opposed to industrial robots, which have to have very specialized tools, we want to be able to leverage using the same tools. That way, we don't have to take as many tools up. We can have the robot help the astronaut by handing tools or maybe even doing some of those tasks by itself.
Designing the robot involved programming complicated skills that humans take for granted, like the reflex to grasp an object when it touches your hand. But Strasser says there are some things they won't be able to work on until Robonaut goes into space.
So the first thing we're going to do is just try to get a much better understanding of how well we can control our robot up in space, which sounds like that wouldn't be much of a big deal, but one of the core technologies of our robot is doing force management. So you know, the weight of the robot and objects and even the gravity on the Earth has a significant impact of how the robot moves around. So once we get up onto the space station where there's virtually no gravity at all, we'll first kind of figure that out. And then we have some task boards we're going to send up, so switches and dials and connectors and things like that, to start getting a better idea of what types of tasks the robot can help with on the space station.
The current version of Robonaut has a head, arms, and torso and will be bolted to the space station floor. Strasser's team plans eventually to create interchangeable bases for different settings. That way, the robot could be used for such diverse tasks as exploring a planetary surface or making exterior repairs on the craft while it's in outer space.
Thanks, Justin. Launching stuff into space is expensive, and the greater the mass, the higher the cost. That's why NASA scientists are working on a new launch system that uses a long rail to provide much of the launch power. Suzanne has that story.
The next generation of spacecraft may be cheaper to launch thanks to a running start on a horizontal rail up to 2 miles long. Physicist Stanley Starr of NASA's Kennedy Space Center works on the project. He says that like the third rail of a train track, a rail could provide much of the launch power to an airplane-like craft. That means the craft itself could be significantly lighter.
If you think about a commercial jet, the jet's engines work the hardest during takeoff. And by assisting that takeoff, we can significantly shrink the mass of those engines.
The craft would take off from the rail like a supersonic jet. Once it reached the upper atmosphere, a more conventional booster rocket would send the payload into space.
What we're trying to do here is take maximum advantage of the characteristics of air-breathing propulsion and rocket propulsion. Use the rocket where it's of best advantage, which is at very high altitudes where there's no oxygen, and going right on into space, and use the air-breathing propulsion in the lower atmosphere where there is oxygen.
In addition to the reduced weight from smaller engines, the craft would also have to carry less oxygen for engine combustion than a conventional spacecraft. That's because during the launch phase, it covers much more distance low to the ground, where there's more oxygen in the air to use. The developers call this an air-breathing engine, and it's similar to a jet engine, so cutting down on the oxygen tanks also makes the engine lighter. Starr says the basic technology for the rail launch system already exists. It just needs to be taken up a few notches.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll have a whole new set of exciting science stories for you. But if you can't wait that long, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you're planning to be in the Washington, D.C. area this month, be sure to check out the first ever USA Science and Engineering Festival on October 23rd and 24th on the National Mall. There'll be over 1,500 science exhibits, and there'll be more than 50 related events held across the country from October 10th through the 24th. For more information, check out www.usasciencefestival.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.